Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I think in many ways it's a tale of two stories, right? So you hear many times in the headlines, there's this reluctance, there's this ambivalence, there's a certain resistance. But when you start peeling the onion a little bit and looking underneath, just about every scaled financial institution is doing some really meaningful work on incorporating digital assets into their own workflow.
It's Thursday, April 25th, 2024. Welcome to Markets Daily, where we speak to the brightest minds in this industry to help you better understand what's going on in crypto markets. Today, it's looking pretty ugly across the board. Bitcoin is down over 4%, and Ethereum is about 5% lower this morning. All assets in the CoinDesk 20 index are trading lower today as well, on average about 6%. So overall, not a great start to the day for U.S. crypto traders. Fun fact, Coinbase came out with a report yesterday and noted that Bitcoin was the best performing asset in 8 out of the past 11 years. The other 3 years, it was the worst performing asset, however. So as always, it just can't seem to find the middle ground. But let's turn to the present and get clarity from our guests on what's happened in Asia overnight. On the show today is Lawrence Latimer, founder and CEO of Dinara. Good morning.
Good morning, Helene, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Lawrence, what happened overnight? This seems like a pretty significant drop to me.
Yeah, well, first, you know, let me say, asset prices in our industry are volatile, and we routinely see 3, 4, 5, 6% corrections over the course of 24 or 48 hours. And so, you know, from what we're seeing, there doesn't seem to be any particular driver of the sort of fundamental driver of the asset price declines that we saw overnight. We saw the upticks after the halving over the weekend. We've seen a pretty choppy last week to 10 days. And so I'm not overly worried. And frankly, I don't think any of our customers or the folks that we interact with on a daily basis are overly worried about the downward volatility over the last 24 hours, last really 18 hours.
Lawrence, I just mentioned you're a business owner and founder in the U.S. So I want to talk a little bit about regulation with you. What developments do you see happening on the regulatory front this year as crypto is going through this fresh adoption phase? Are you overall getting positive signals?
Yeah. Well, I want to do two things. One is break out kind of the legislative environment from the regulatory environment. And certainly we're seeing a lot of positive developments on the legislative side. Senators Loomis and Gillibrand just in the past week reintroduced one of their packages of legislation, the Payment Stablecoin Act. And, you know, we think there's a lot of good things that are in there. And frankly, it's just good to get legislators talking positively about implementing greater clarity into the landscape and setting the kinds of ground rules that we think are important. The UK has done something similar, talking about putting out stablecoin legislation and other rules for crypto by July. And so those are generally, you know, we see those as good development. Greater clarity, we think, is important for the industry. Obviously, those rules can benefit certain actors over others. Certainly the $100 billion kind of cap that's currently proposed in the Loomis-Gillibrand bill is of concern, I think, for some of the smaller players in the industry. But generally, that legislation is good. I think, listen, on the regulatory side, I'm not a regulator, and so I don't opine on authoritatively on regulatory matters. But I'd say thematically, we would love to see greater collaboration with our regulators, particularly here in the U.S. You see some greater collaboration with industry and some other jurisdictions. And we are seeing a bunch of enforcement actions, whether it's the Uniswap Wells Notice, obviously some recent activity with Samurai, Zepbox, Ripple, DNJ enforcement actions. We've got some sentencing and some fines that are either proposed or coming up. But it's important that we weed out bad actors in the space, but it's also important that we don't, in an unintended way, stifle an industry that is proving itself to be pretty a generational type of innovation and a generational type of change from technology to even assets that's happening globally. The U.S. has done a tremendous job at historically at being a leader in innovation. And the story of our growth in this country, and certainly in the post-World War period, has been one about embracing innovation. So this is an area where we think we wouldn't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater when it comes to how we regulate and legislate the industry.
Is there anything that you're watching in particular or that you're worried about could happen this year? I mean, the crypto landscape in the U.S. is still very uncertain. So as a crypto CEO, what are some of the regulatory developments that you're closely watching or waiting for?
Yeah. Well, there's a handful of things that we're watching and really that our customers and potential customers who are businesses primarily in the U.S. are watching. And so we're looking at things that are going to either signal gains or kind of challenges for longer term adoption of both the asset and other products and services that are built on top of a blockchain. So first and foremost, like everybody else, you know, it's not just regulation and legislation, but like everybody else, we've been watching Bitcoin ETF flows in the U.S. Obviously, we've got the passage in Hong Kong of the ETFs there. We're looking at what's going to happen with ETH ETFs. Applications are in here in the U.S. I believe we're expecting some feedback, and we're in a comment period right now. We're expecting some feedback from our legislators at some point, excuse me, our regulators at some point in May. So those are things, and the continued, what is happening with those flows, right? We've seen the tailing off of inflows and Bitcoin ETFs here in the U.S., but we may see a resurgence once those go into production in Hong Kong and in other jurisdictions.
Right.
On the legislative side, we've already talked about that Lummis Gillibrand stablecoin bill. We think that's really big. And even in a divided Congress, we think that seems to be some momentum around that particular piece of legislation to get passed, which could be great overall for the industry, great for the adoption and continued adoption of stablecoins, both here in the U.S. and globally. So that's something we're watching closely. Again, the U.K. talking about their legislation on stablecoins and crypto, which they're aspiring to propose by July. So those are things that are really important. Again, we'll give signal long-term support for the industry. On the regulatory front, like everybody else, we're watching, right? I mentioned some of the other ones here in the U.S., the Uniswap Wells Notice, some of the DOJ enforcement action, whether it's around CZ or, Doquan, the fines that are being proposed for Ripple and others. And so just seeing how that plays out, again, we want to, like everyone else, all the good actors in the space, we want to see any bad actors that are weeded out of the industry. What we don't want to see is, again, throwing out the baby with the bathwater and having good actors or really stifling innovation in a way that hurts U.S. competitiveness. We think that's bad for everybody. I'd say a few other things that we're looking at, inflation and interest rates. I think like everybody else, those are important. And whether you see, particularly Bitcoin, you talk about a financial asset, whether you see it as a inflation hedge or more of a risk asset, there's some sensitivity in the macro to inflation and to interest rates. And I'd say the last thing is just overall institutional adoption. And so all the things we've mentioned here are going to feed into institutional adoption. But overall, we want to see how institutions are either buying or interacting with the financial assets, but also with the technology underneath, right? And so institutional adoption is really what's going to fuel that second horizon of crypto development. And so whether it's as a financial asset, you know, when Larry Fink starts talking about the tokenization of all financial assets, that's big news, and sort of living into it in ways at BlackRock with his actions, or whether it's with different types of technology, whether you think about, you know, JP Morgan, whose CEO has been one of the biggest naysayers of the industry, but they've got their JPM coin and using it as programmable payments among some of its institutional clients. You've got the Canton Network, a consortium of 30 top financial and tech firms, right, that using that as an interoperable kind of network of networks, facilitating tokenization of real world assets. You've got different loyalty programs that are being launched on NFTs, whether it's Lufthansa, Sony, Louis Vuitton. So all of those things we think are generally good for the industry. And even though they may not directly impact financial asset prices, we think generally they're really great support for the demystification of digital assets and ultimately for the adoption of digital assets, both as a financial asset and as a technology.
Global crypto regulation, the disruptive power of AI, the rise of tokenization. Consensus is the one event where experts convene to talk about the ideas shaping our digital future. Join developers, investors, founders, brands, policymakers, and plenty more in Austin, Texas from May 29th to the 31st. The 10th annual Consensus is curated by CoinDesk to feature the industry's most sought-after speakers, unparalleled networking opportunities, and unforgettable experiences. Take 15% off with this registration code, MD15. Register now at consensus.coindesk.com.
So speaking of institutional adoption, you or Dinara as a financial services company, I'm sure you talk to a lot of TradFi institutions. What are you hearing from them?
Yeah. Well, I think in many ways it's a tale of two stories, right? So you hear many times in the headlines, there's this reluctance, there's this ambivalence, there's a certain resistance. But when you start peeling the onion a little bit and looking underneath, just about every scale financial institution is doing some really meaningful work on incorporating digital assets into their own workflows. And so, again, I mentioned a couple of them. JP Morgan's Onyx Group has been doing some really innovative work around using blockchain for clearing and settlement and for other, tools in the industry. I mentioned the Canton Network, different loyalty programs. You've got, you know, all the activity happening at places like BlackRock. Fidelity has also been really at the fore, again, using blockchain for clearing and settlement and other use cases. So we're seeing a tremendous amount of activity and adoption. And what we hear also from our customers and our customers' customers is that there's a bit of a hesitance because of the lack of clarity on the legislative front, the lack of clarity on the regulatory front. And as those things become clearer, more defined, there'll be an incredible kind of watershed moment and really a mass adoption, both on the technology side and as an increased use as a financial asset as well.
So, Lawrence, speaking of lack of clarity from regulators, if the CFTC finds Ether to be a security, which it is currently investigating, what would that mean for the future of those businesses here in the US that rely on the Ethereum ecosystem?
Yeah. Well, listen, certainly there's kind of conflicting, pronouncements from our regulators here in the U.S. about what's going to happen there. But as you mentioned, there's now another investigation, sort of a research looking into the designation of Ether. It'd be a challenge, I think, right? There's been, I think much of the industry has been under the impression that ETH would not be designated as a security. So I think there'd be a real challenge for those that have built a business model that requires ETH not to be a security. I think there are also a lot of alternatives that are out there. Thinking of ETH as an L1 and as many of the applications built on top of that, frankly, there are a lot of alternatives that are out there. And I think what we're hearing from, again, from our customers and those that we interact with in the industry is that there'd likely be a pretty significant shift to other L1s or even L2s that don't qualify or aren't designated by U.S. Authorities as a security. But it remains to be seen. I think we'll, as we get there and as the implications of any decision bear themselves out, the industry will respond relatively quickly. The Bitcoin ecosystem, the digital asset, the crypto ecosystem is pretty diverse. There's a lot of options out there right now. And it's these types of macro events that are going to help define who the winners and losers are on that macro environment.
Earlier this week, I reported that the New York Stock Exchange is looking into potentially operating on a 24/7 schedule like crypto. How much would that influence crypto trading, if at all, in your opinion?
Yeah. Well, I think, so kind of zooming out a little bit, crypto's been a 24-hour trading technology almost since its inception. So for crypto specifically, I think it frankly it'll have very little impact. This is really the traditional financial markets catching up to where crypto markets have been from the beginning, where Forex markets have been, and really even some retail platforms on traditional finance have already been allowing 24-hour trading. I think Robinhood is often an example that's used. This is not about the technology. This is about tradition. That's really what's been holding up 24-hour trading or certainly, 24/5 or 24/7 trading. And so that, traditional financial infrastructure, there exists a potential to support 24/7 trading. I think what you're seeing with crypto markets, frankly, blockchain, could make that even more efficient and has really been a driver to say, hey, this doesn't make a lot of sense in the current environment that we're in today's environment. Why don't we consider moving towards 24/7 trading? And when you have other venues that are asking 24/7 exchange that are asking for permission to trade, on a 24-hour basis, it really does light a fire under, NYSE, NASDAQ, and the other existing TradFi security exchanges.
Awesome, Lawrence. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure. Thank you and the entire team for having me today. Have a great day.
That was Lawrence Latimer, co-founder and CEO of Denara. And that's it for Markets Daily today. If you missed any of this week's episodes, check out Coindesk.com to catch up. Otherwise, my co-host Jen Sanasi will be back Monday with a fresh episode. I'm Helene Braun. Thanks for tuning in.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.